Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. My name is Frank Weltner, and you're listening to The World Today, January the 15th, 2001. Our first article is terrifying. It shows Israel and the United States working clandestinely to invade the computers of Iran in an effort to slow down their nuclear development. The Israeli Dimona complex in the Negev Desert is famous as a heavily guarded heart of Israel's never-acknowledged nuclear arms program, where neat rows of factories make atomic fuel for the arsenal. Over the past 2 years, according to intelligence and military experts familiar with its operations, Dimona has taken on a new, equally secret role as a critical testing ground in a joint American and Israeli effort to undermine Iran's efforts to make a bomb of its own. Behind Dimona's barbed wire, the experts say, Israel has spun nuclear centrifuges virtually identical to Iran's at Natanz, where Iranian scientists are struggling to enrich uranium. They say Dimona tested the effectiveness of the Stuxnet computer worm, a destructive program that appears to have wiped out roughly a fifth of Iran's nuclear centrifuges and helped delay, though not destroy, Tehran's ability to make its first nuclear arms. To check out the worm, you have to know the machine, said an American expert on nuclear intelligence. The reason the worm has been effective is that Israelis tried it out. Though American and Israeli officials refuse to talk publicly about what goes on at Dimona, the operations there, as well as related efforts in the United States, are among the newest and strongest clues suggesting that the virus was designed as an American-Israeli project to sabotage the Iranian program. And now allow me to give my instant analysis of this story, which, as I say, I find extremely terrifying, and the reason I find it terrifying is that both Israel and the United States have deemed it proper to infect computers inside of a foreign nation, a sovereign nation, over the internet, in this case in Iran. And it doesn't matter if you consider Iran to be your enemy or your friend. Any nation that would infect the computers of another nation has committed an atrocious act, an act of warfare, a violation of international law. Under the UN, you should not attack member nations of the United Nations. And Iran is, whether you like it or not, a member of the United Nations. And the fact that these two arrogant nations, the most arrogant on earth, Israel and the United States, who are colonial empires in their own right, Israel having its own colony inside of its own nation where it has enslaved the Palestinians, both Christian and Islamic, and where they have created huge genocidal hate rants against the Islamic peoples of this world. This colonial empire, this tiny midget of an empire, this insect of an empire, has done more damage to this globe than you could ever suspect, including before it was even formed, that the people who helped form it, many of them worked inside the Soviet Union, to murder 65 million Christians over a 20-year period of time. And then to promulgate lies about Germany and about other nations in World War II who were not a part of the Allied contingents, and the very people who perpetrated these lies were specialists in psychological operations for the U.S. Army and for the Russian intelligence operations, including the Jewish Anti-Fascist League, which promulgated lies one after the other for over 20 years. So what we have here is a breach of the peace. These nations, United States and Israel, have developed a virus to attack the nuclear program of Iran. And whether you like their nuclear program or not, these two nations have no moral claim as being any better than Iran. Because Israel claims, or at least people in Israel claim, that that country has up to upwards of 400 or more nuclear weapons. And the United States has 20,000 nuclear weapons. So who in the world are the United States or Israel to condemn any other nation for wanting to have nuclear weapons when we have so many? If we wanted to condemn them, we would have to be morally able to do so, and countries that have 400 to 20,000 nuclear weapons are not morally able to lead anyone into a nuclear drought. Now, unless we are willing to destroy our 20,000 nuclear weapons, every one of them, and Israel willing to destroy all of its 400 nuclear weapons, then we need to keep our mouths shut, because we have no status here. The only status we have are those of nuclear thugs who own nuclear weapons and plan to take care of them and to keep them so that we can browbeat other people around the world with our nuclear power and make them bend their knee to our will. And this itself is wrong. It doesn't get much more wrong than this. So we need to, as a people, reconsider what we've been doing and to pull back, to remove our viruses and try to help the Iranians to restore whatever program they lost. Because what we did was an invasion. It was an act of war, period. We invaded their space in their computers with the idea of destroying their nuclear program. And any way you look at it, this is illegal. And we are culpable. But of course, in the present state of corruption in the world, the United Nations isn't going to say anything about it. England's not going to say anything about it. No one's going to say anything about it. Because the capitalist pig states of this world, England, France, Germany, Russia, the United States, Israel, we have the most power, and so people aren't going to thwart us. And one of the reasons they aren't is that we have these nuclear weapons, and they don't. So the hypocrisy of what we did to Iran is incredible. And if they were to invade our computers with viruses, we would certainly consider it as an act of war, especially in the state of belligerency that the United States and Israel are attempting to promulgate against Iran. We're just waiting for any little thing that they do to attack them. And this has been mentioned in the newspapers of the Jewish communist news world. All those newspapers here in the United States, which are part of that group of people that started Jewish communism in the Soviet Union and still run the newspapers here, they're not going to come out against this. If anything, they're going to be for it, because it's against Iran. And Israel is against Iran. And whatever Israel wants, these newspapers want. Because Israel was founded by the Rothschilds. And these newspapers are beholden to the Rothschilds for the loans that allow them to keep their newspapers afloat. The Guardian newspaper in England has been accused of hacking various individuals who are wealthy enough to have the power to sue them for it. Hacking is a tremendous invasion of privacy, hacking of phones. And evidently, Murdoch's newspaper, or at least people working for it, are thought to have hacked into the telephones of many people who have star quality. And five of them are threatening to sue and have lawyers already to go. So that will be an interesting case, because there are at least five law firms now representing these alleged victims. And they've confirmed that they expect more claims to be filed within the next few weeks. Evidently, this newspaper, this Guardian newspaper, is out of control. The increasing number of people who are suing or threatening to sue the paper has raised the fresh questions about how widespread the practice of phone hacking was on the newspaper while it was edited by the Prime Minister's Director of Communications, Andy Coulson. Senior executives on the paper maintain that the practice was the work of a rogue reporter, Clive Goodman, who was jailed in 2007 for his part in the scandal. But many believe that hundreds or even thousands of phones were hacked by a private investigator, Glenn Mulcair, while he was working for the paper. Questions are being asked about the role of the Metropolitan Police, which was obliged by the Crown Prosecution Service to inform suspected victims that their phones had been hacked. Paul Farrelly, MP, a member of the Parliamentary Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee that conducted an investigation into the allegations, said he was concerned that the Met had adopted a new policy towards Now Scotland Yard asked for a suspected victim to outline on what grounds they believe their phone has been hacked before making a search. Are we entering a world in which our privacy is meaningless to people in the media as well as in the government? We know that the government's been hacking our phones, but we haven't always known that the media was hacking our phones. This is something very, very dangerous, and it shows the gutter level to which our society has descended down the spiraling staircase into something that is far different from what we ever had before to deal with. And we need to slow this down and try to be very careful that we salvage whatever privacy is left to each and every individual in our nation. Because once we lose our privacy, we lose all of our dignity. We lose our ability to lead our lives the way that we want to, and to do so securely without anyone being able to listen in on our conversations and on our most intimate moments. This is the least that we can expect, is that our privacy, our valuable privacy, will be maintained. Speaking of the incredible pace of indecencies, we find that girls have been busted for phony Facebook pages in which lewd profiles were targeted against former high school friends. Two Florida girls are facing cyber-stalking charges for allegedly creating a fake Facebook profile in the name of one of their fellow high school students, and then placing obscene photos on the page, including one showing that their classmate's head was resting atop the body of a nude, prepubescent girl's body, according to the investigators. When deputies with the Lee County Sheriff's Office last month interviewed one of the suspects, she admitted creating two fake Facebook pages as a joke because she thought it would be funny. Miss Wynn said that she was once friends with the unnamed victim, but they do not like each other now. Wynn told Probers that a second girl, Mackenzie Barker, 15, created the image showing the victim's head atop the naked body. Wynn reportedly copped to placing a photo of an adult man's erect penis by the victim's face, according to a sheriff's report. Wynn and Barker were arrested this week and each charged with a felony count of aggravated stalking of a minor under 16. The duo attends Estero High School, along with the victim, who told a deputy that she had been subjected to numerous incidents of teasing and ridicule as a result of the hoax. One of the fake pages, which listed 181 friends, included an assortment of disparaging comments, including an about me claim that, you may know, I'm a huge whore. And the rest of this I really can't tell you on the radio, because it just wouldn't be fair to my listeners. So this is some of the indecency that's going on in our country today, and these two girls have gone over the top in doing this. It kind of hurt me to read this, and I wish I had read further in it before I began to report on it. I reported on it live as I was reading it, which I like to do with stories because as I read them, I am able to figure out much of the in-depth portion of the story, which is there but hasn't been spoken about, because I know what reporters have to go through to get their stories together. And so the other leaks that they have that aren't mentioned are always there in between the lines, which I can read very, very well. And I could see that the reporter herself was shocked by this story, as I was, and I'm pretty sure that you were. Of course, these are just high school girls. They're just high school girls, so we can't be too draconian in what's done to them. But they have certainly lowered the standard for young women in high schools. I find it despicable, and I guess part of it is that this is such a new culture with the internet that we could probably expect these things to happen, and I suppose they're not that much different than the notes that we used to give back and forth to each other in dark pencil on paper during classes, in which we would draw nasty pictures of girls and boys and whatever and scurrilous lies about them. It's just that they're so much more vivid now on the internet. So perhaps it's not as bad as it looks. Perhaps it's more a continuation of the aberrations that most people in the craziness known as adolescent go through. And I'm sure these girls will get over this, including the one that has been victimized. It's sort of interesting that the two who victimized the girl are now themselves the object of their own victimization. And so they're going to go through a lot of mental torture themselves for what they've done, which is a kind of divine punishment, I think. And probably well-deserved. Well, now that we're past the decadence of these schoolgirls and their little story that they fell victim to by their own undoing, we now have a report that U.S. satisfaction remains near a 12-month low. And despite the Republicans winning House control, Republicans have a satisfaction level lower even than Democrats. In Washington, Gallup found that 19% of Americans are satisfied with the way that things are going in the United States at this time. There you have it, 19%. In other words, 81% are not. This is essentially on par with the lowest level in the past 12 months, which was 17% satisfied, that was registered 2 months ago in December. So the graph shows that the satisfaction continues to decline. And it started low to begin with. I mean, what's to be satisfied about? The country's given itself away to the bankers, to these Rothschild, satanic, red communist banking elites who are responsible for the development of the traitorous government in Moscow, which murdered 65 million of its Christian subjects over a 20-year period. Well, the banks of New York sat, watched, and observed, and said nothing. And their newspapers that they owned said nothing, which were 95% of the newspapers in the United States. And so that tragedy was allowed to continue because the banks themselves paid for it and watched it happen and made sure that you and I remained blinded to it so that the United States could do nothing about it, could not even register its discontent with the governments in Moscow that were being run by these bankers and by people like Tolstoy, who lived in New York, worked with the bankers, starred in their movies, etc. While satisfaction with the direction of our country remains stagnant, I shouldn't say our country. I don't really feel a part of this country anymore. And I know more and more people who don't feel as though they're part of this country. We live here, but the government has never done anything that we wanted it to do. It has never really communicated with us except with automatic letters from computers, which is a form of communication. It's actually a form of snubbing. You write them a letter, you use your mind to write it, and they have a blind computer. Figure out by the wording what would be the closest satisfactory letter that you might like, sends it to you, and it snubs you. It insults you. Well, while the satisfaction with the direction of America remains stagnant, the same poll found that Americans' approval of Congress increased, get this, to 20%. What a miracle. And that was from a low of 13% in December during the lame duck session. This slight disconnect may reveal that the Americans are hopeful about what the new Congress can accomplish, but still perceive significant problems in the United States in general. It's felt that the loss of confidence and satisfaction is tied to the economy, which is so economic that it's almost scotch. There's not much going on. Oh, we were told that retail went up during Christmas, and of course it's January now, so now we're being told, or untold, what we were told. We're being told that, oh, we've had a mistake. What went up was Ford sold 25% more cars, so did Toyota. Some luxury goods were sold at some of the highest priced department stores. But as far as the regular little guy's store like Walmart or Macy's, well, they were down 1.5% again. So they didn't have any increases at all. In fact, sales were rather stingy in general. When U.S. satisfaction reached an all-time high of 71% in 1999, 6% of Americans named the economy as the most important problem facing the country. When satisfaction fell to an all-time low of 7% in October 2008, amid the escalating financial crisis, 47% said the economy was the most important problem. In the present poll, 26% chose the economy as the nation's number one problem, and another 29% mentioned unemployment. Well, I'm sure that all of us have been unemployed at one time or another, and it's really not something to be happy about. According to Gallup, 13% of Republicans are satisfied with the country. Independents are 16%. Democrats, 27%. Conservatives are 12% satisfied. Moderates, 23%. And liberals, 27%. So, even at top, it's only 27% that are satisfied, leaving 77% dissatisfied. Well, that's, I guess, the way that it goes. Usually, when people aren't making any money, they're dissatisfied. But like I tried to tell you in my last program, for some reason, Americans seem to be really interested in making money. And they don't feel like life is good for them unless they're making money. And I find this to be a tremendous weakness of our people. Why is it that you can't adjust to living your life as a kind of semi-pauper? Actually, times aren't that much worse now than they were before 2008, except that there's a few more people who are out in the street, but not many, and no one's really camped out in the street. Most of you, if you lost your home, you're probably living with relatives, or you got yourself an apartment. You can't be that much worse off than you were 10 years ago. And the only thing that happened in that 10 years was that was any different is that the bubbles that were known as the internet bubble and the housing bubble grew so large that they exploded and burst. But since most people didn't really lose their homes or their stocks, In fact, most of them may not even have had a home or stocks. They weren't affected. They've read about it. They've had some secondary effects in that maybe their companies laid off quite a few people because those who lost money on these bubbles aren't buying anything right now. And there are no houses being built specifically or practically. There are a few specifically being built, but not very many. The housing starts are way, way down, almost to nothing. And the purchase of regular commodities is quite low, and gas is on its way up, which means that the economy, whatever puff that it has to it, is going to blow away. Because when you spend $80 to fill up your tank, or $40 or $50, that means you don't have money to take your wife and kids out to the store or to the restaurant. So you stay at home, you do your own cooking, you don't buy expensive new clothes, you buy the minimum, because you don't have any money left, because it was just taken up by Goldman Sachs and the other hound dogs who have driven up the price of gas through their speculations and gambling with fake phony money from the Federal Reserve, which they can multiply at will and counterfeit, as they have been doing for many, many decades. Well, if you try to do that, you will be arrested for it. But they can do these things which are illegal to other people because they are absolutely special. And probably one of the reasons they're special is that they give so much money to the politicians that the politicians, whenever they hear that someone in Goldman Sachs is under investigation, they'll pick up the phone and call the FBI or someone that they know and say, "I really think you ought to lay off of these gentlemen." I know that many of you are getting very, very tired of dire global warnings. But I found an article today from Live Science that says, even if humans stop producing excess carbon dioxide in 2100, that's about 70 years from now. The lingering effects, actually it's 90 years from now, the lingering effects of global warming could span the next 1,000 years, many thousands actually. The results would be that by the year 3000, global warming would be more than a hot topic. The West Antarctic ice sheet would collapse, and global sea levels would rise by about 13 feet. Using a computer model, researchers looked at the two scenarios, and into humans' industrial carbon dioxide emissions by 2010 and by 2100, and then stretched out to the year 3000. Even if humans were able to stop emitting excess carbon dioxide, or if they figured out a way to completely capture it, the effects of global warming would continue to accumulate. That's because previously emitted carbon dioxide lingers in the atmosphere, in the oceans, on the land, and unlike land, warm only gradually, according to one of the university study researchers. An associate professor of geography at a great university has said that the number of gases contributing to global warming, among them carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, are the principal greenhouse gases, and they can linger in the atmosphere for centuries. He said some of the carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere this century will be there still 1,000 years from now. So light up that cigarette, start that car engine, heat your house, get your stove going, make some carbon dioxide. It may be the only mark that you leave on this earth. The researcher and his colleagues found that by the year 3000, the brunt of the changes will have occurred in the southern hemisphere. Not surprisingly, the 2100 scenario yielded more extreme results. In particular, the model predicted that southern oceans, the combined South Pacific, Atlantic, and Indian Oceans, where the Antarctic circumpolar current resides, would warm considerably, and with some far-reaching results. You ready for the horror? The 2100 scenario highlights stark differences between northern and southern hemispheres. In the north, changes will occur up to 2100. Some of those will reverse partially. It will cool a little bit after 2100. The rainfall in high latitudes will tend to decrease. And the biggest ongoing change is in the southern hemisphere, where the long-term warming will occur for centuries. The researchers found that warming would be concentrated most the further from the equator and higher latitudes at ocean depths between 0.3 and 0.9 miles. The model showed these waters would warm very little by 2100, but by 3000 they'd likely increase by 5.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is a tremendous amount. But this isn't the only factor that could contribute to global southern warming. A deep current from the warmer North Atlantic is moving slowly toward the Antarctic, carrying warmer water with it. In addition, intensified winds would help mix warm waters into the southern oceans, and finally, the loss of Antarctic sea ice would allow more heat to enter the ocean. So this might really be bad news. While the 2010 scenario calls for a sea level of 9.1 inches, the 2100 scenario would generate a sea level of more than 3.3 feet due to thermal expansion of the ocean. If we stopped emitting carbon dioxide now, which would bring us close to the 2010 scenario, it's unlikely the ice sheet would collapse. In addition, the simultaneous warming of the south and the cooling of the north may cause the intertropical convergence zone, the region where the northeasterly and southerly trade winds converge, forming a band of clouds or thunderstorms near the equator to shift southward. As a result, the drying predicted for North Africa could continue even after emissions are stopped in 2100, and the region could lose an additional 30% of its precipitation. While the legacy effect of the carbon dioxide lingering in the atmosphere has been demonstrated by others, other research has yet to predict the warming of the high-latitude southern oceans. So, what do you think of that? They didn't get really specific about what was going to happen, but we're talking less rain. We're talking about probably higher yields from agriculture, since there will be more warmth. Most farming people will do better in a warmer climate. The worst thing that could happen would be global cooling. You know, the Ice Age didn't produce too many good wheat fields in Kansas. Kansas was covered with a mile or two of ice. Can't raise wheat there. And I've driven across Kansas, and there are a bunch of little hills, which showed the kind of mottled way in which the earth that was scraped up from Canada and brought south by those glaciers, how they eroded as the glaciers melted into little hills along the Great Plain, which at one time was like an ocean from all the water melting, which I found quite interesting. Kansas is an interesting place. Most people find it boring, but there's a certain spiritualness to it, I think. In another story, Bob and Amanda Herring spent more than a year providing food to the homeless people in downtown Houston, and they did so every day. They fed them, they left behind no trash, and doled out warm meals very peacefully without a single crime being committed. But that ended 2 weeks ago when the city shut down their Feed a Friend effort for lack of a permit. And city officials say the couple most likely will not be able to obtain one. We don't really know what they want. We just think they don't want us down there feeding people, said Bobby Herring, a Christian rapper who goes by the stage name of Trey Nine. Anyone serving food for public consumption whether for the homeless or for sale, must have a permit, said Kathy Barton, a spokeswoman for the Health and Human Services Department. You know, I see stories like this where people are peacefully feeding the homeless who have nowhere else to go. And it reminds me that if you're feeding birds, you have a moral duty to continue feeding them or they'll starve to death because they come to a certain place to get food. And suddenly these people, who are not nearly as mobile as birds because they only have 2 feet to walk on, they probably don't have the best of shoes. Well, where are they going to get their food? Or they could die out in the cold without any food. To get the permit, the food must be prepared in a certified kitchen with a certified food manager. Well, isn't that interesting? I mean, you've been cooking your food at home without a certified kitchen or a certified food manager, and you're still alive. You've probably been doing that all your life. But if you're going to feed the homeless, you just can't have you frying some bologna in your kitchen and giving it to them. Why, you might poison them if you did that. Of course, I can see that, Miss Barton. Why, these terrible people don't have a certified kitchen. The regulations are all the more essential in the case of the homeless, Barton said, because poor people are the most vulnerable to foodborne illness. And also are the least likely to have access to health care. She got all the answers, doesn't she, folks? Bobby Heron said those rules would preclude them from continuing to feed the 60 to 120 people they assisted nightly for more than a year. The food had been donated from area businesses and prepared in various kitchens by volunteers or by his wife. He and his wife became involved in the effort several years ago, when she would take leftover food from work to the homeless downtown. From there, it expanded into a full-time effort for her working through Eyes on Me, the Herons nonprofit organization that focuses on Christian-themed youth outreach efforts. Nearly every day last year, they distributed food prepared or donated by volunteers or local stores at 6 p.m. at the corner of Commerce and San Jacinto near the Harris County Jail, Bobby Heron said. On November the 8th, they were approached by Houston police officers and asked to provide food at another location under an overpass at Commerce and Travis Streets, adjacent to Buffalo Bayou, he recalled. They were happy to move to the new location and continue to provide food there until a few weeks ago, when a park ranger and the two police officers told them they would have to stop until they could obtain a permit. America, you are just beyond repair. Just beyond repair. I mean, here we have people who've been feeding other people. No one's been sick. They've been doing their best to feed them. But all they're doing is taking them food. And they're saying, well, they have to have a certified kitchen in order to do this. But these poor people who go to the store and buy some bologna and then cut a piece of it off and put it on two pieces of bread, the only kitchen they have are their hands. And their hands may be filled with dirt, you know, from sleeping on the ground. They may have no place to wash their hands. So obviously the food that they're eating probably has some infectious materials on it because of the uncleanliness of the situation. But here you have these two Christian outreach people providing them with the cleanest food they can make in their home. And but they have to have a certified kitchen in order to put peanut butter and jelly onto bread and then cut it into little triangles for these people. Now you see how important that is, don't you? I tell you what, I never cease to be amazed about the cruelty of people who are in government and who think that they're helping other people, when in fact they are hurting people all the time. Well, the horror in Washington, in the freak show in D.C. continues, and now the feds are threatening to sue states over union laws. The National Labor Relations Board, made up of thugs from the unions, appointed by thugs from the Democratic Party, on Friday threatened to sue Arizona, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Utah over constitutional amendments guaranteeing workers the right to a secret ballot in union elections. The agency's acting general counsel, Leif Solomon, probably a Jewish individual of a 2% minority in this country, said the amendments conflict with federal law, which gives employers the option of recognizing a union if a majority of workers sign cards that support unionizing. The amendments approved November the 2nd have taken effect in South Dakota and Utah, and will do so in Arizona and South Carolina. Now this little minority buzzard, Solomon, Mr. Solomon, is going to sue these people using the power and prestige and money of the federal government against these little states. Business and anti-union groups sought the amendments in these states, which passed, arguing that such secrecy of the ballot is necessary to protect workers against union intimidation. They are concerned that Congress might enact legislation requiring employers to allow the card check process for forming unions instead of secret ballot elections. In letters to the Attorney General of each state, the minority person, Solomon, who's probably of the Zionist minority, I'm not absolutely certain, but I would think so from the name Solomon, seems logical at least, says the amendments are preempted by the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution because they conflict with employee rights laid out in the National Labor Relations Act. That clause says that when state and federal laws are at odds, federal law prevails. Solomon is asking the attorneys general in South Dakota and Utah for official statements agreeing that their amendments are unconstitutional to conserve state and federal resources. Now come on, states, let the federal government waste its money on it. They want you to not do what your people want to do. Tell them to stuff it and spend all the money they want that you're going to appeal and appeal and appeal. In his letter to South Carolina's attorney general, Solomon asked the state to take measures that would prevent the legislature from ratifying the amendment. So here you have Solomon, a little minority person, less than 2% in the United States, represents nobody except his little pig elfish self, asking the states to take measures that would prevent the legislature from ratifying an amendment voted for by the people. He requested that Arizona's governor decline to make the amendment official, as well as the Attorney General in South Carolina. Utah Attorney General Mark Shurtleff said he believes the state is on solid ground. He plans to coordinate a response with the other three states. If they want to bring a lawsuit, then bring it, Shurtleff said. We believe that a secret ballot is as fundamental a right as any American has had since the beginning of this country. We want to protect the constitutional rights of our citizens. South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley also promised to vigorously defend our South Dakota Constitution against any federal lawsuit, especially from a minority person like Solomon. Please, give me a break. We let these people come over here and live. They're Jewish. They're not Christian. We tolerate them, and then they show intolerant things toward our states. Because this man, obviously, since he's with the National Labor Relations Board, I don't know, it's just disgusting. I shouldn't say anything more about it. Except that I'm sick and tired of these red Bolshevik tribal people trying to interfere in our country's affairs for communism, the communism that they had when they started the Soviet Union, and which they used to destroy the lives of 65 million Christians whom they murdered in Russia from 1917 to 1940. They murdered 65 million Christians, and now they're here in the United States telling us that we want you to be tolerant to everybody. Well, they weren't tolerant at all. They murdered these people. But they want you to be tolerant. How two-faced. And how typical of them. Yeah, it's here in the 20th and 21st centuries. They're busy right now tolerantly killing Muslims and Christians in Israel. And saying, well, it's not Israel. That Gaza's not Israel. And that the West Bank isn't Israel, so stay out of it. And then when you try to do something about it, they say, oh, it is Israel. It is Israel. Stay out of it. Stay out of it. What scumbags. In an article by Ross Clark, he says that petroleum prices may kill the economy and the coalition in England. He says that there's an alarm clock that's about to start sounding as people need more and more support because they don't have any money left. But what's the use of supporting people if they can't even go outside and get into their car? Which means they can't go to work. Fuel prices were nudging their record highs of July 2008. In England, unleaded petrol was $2.50 a quart, which is $10 a gallon. And diesel was even more than that. So if you think you have it bad at $3 a gallon, they're paying $10 a quart, a gallon in England, or 3 1/3 times more than you are. What do you think of that, huh? What do you think of that? And you know what? This is all done by the bankers who are using fake phony money that they create out of nothing except a sleight of hand on their ledger in their banks. And they use that fake money that doesn't even exist to drive up the future prices of oil per barrel. And that is why you're paying more. These people, every time they do this, they are stealing from you. They are injuring you, and they need to be sued in a class action suit where they have to get back every dime they've stolen ever since 2008 when gasoline went to around $4 a gallon because of what they did. What they're doing is injuring us. And when you're injured, you have a right to sue someone for your injury and for redresses to it. There was an interesting story today about a boy who's 9 years old, and his Disney World trip was ruined after U.S. immigration ruled him a threat. That's right, a 9-year-old boy, his dream trip to Disney World was ruined when U.S. immigration officials ruled that he was a threat. Civil servants Kathy and Edward Francis plan to surprise their grandson, Micah Strachan, with the holiday of a lifetime to Florida in February. They were only going to tell Micah about it when they took him to the airport February 19th for a flight to the U.S. They had already spent more than £1,500 or $3,000 on plane tickets and had been organizing the trip for weeks, for months actually. But this week, the U.S. embassy officials denied the schoolboy a visa to enter the U.S. They said there was a risk he would not leave the U.S. at the end of his holiday, and refused his application under Section 214B of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Micah was born in Britain and has lived in Middlesex all his life with his mother, Claudia Lewis. He holds a South African passport because his grandparents, Kathy and Edward, who have lived and worked in Britain since 1990, only got him a South African passport. And they are originally from South Africa. A letter from Micah's primary school was included in his visa application, confirming he did indeed attend the school. But the embassy's rejection letter to Micah said, because you either did not demonstrate strong ties outside the United States or were not able to demonstrate that your intended activities in the U.S. would be consistent with the visa status, you were ineligible. Yes, this dastardly little would-be terrorist, 9 years old, is a threat to the United States of America. One of billions of threats course, any jerk can come here and get a visa, but not this 9-year-old boy, because he has a South African passport. His grandmother, Kathy, from Brixton, South London, said it was going to be a total surprise. He would have loved it. We felt so deflated by the whole experience, I want to know why he would be deprived of the holiday of a lifetime. It is so crazy to think that he wouldn't leave the country. This is causing severe stress on the family, and I'm going to fight this. Tessa Jowell, Labour MP for Dulwich and West Norwood, said, I was very concerned to learn about the situation facing my constituents, and of course understand the distress the decision has caused. I have asked the American authorities to look again at this and very much hope they will feel able to reconsider their decision. Meanwhile, the family have written to U.S. President Barack Obama and the heartless Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to ask for an explanation of the decision. Ah, yes, the woman with a heart. Heartless Hillary Clinton. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. So she does have a heart. A U.S. Embassy spokesman said it was not policy to comment on individual immigration cases. I swear to God, I find these stories and I start laughing the moment I start reading them. They're just truly incredible. And the dastardly things that these bureaucrats come up with. They're sitting there in an embassy somewhere in England looking at this 9-year-old boy and saying that he might not leave. Well, gee, isn't that what the Mexicans do? They walk across a border and they don't leave? I mean, give me a break. These people are just totally out of their minds. So then we have a story about the Rhode Island governor. This is a good one. He has called for an ad ban on talk radio. And he thinks that if advertisements aren't possible on talk radio, that talk radio might not talk anymore, I suppose. He says that when talk radio hosts use harshly divisive language, the advertisers should shut them down. His name is Governor Lincoln Chaffee. Chaffee said the solution to the vitriolic rhetoric, which some have linked to the shooting of U.S. Representative Gabby Giffords over the weekend, is for people to stop paying for it, including not buying books from the people who use such language. Well, Mr. Chaffee, you seem to represent the United States of America, which has been at war now in the Middle East for 20 years and has killed several millions of people. And I don't believe I've heard you say anything about the murder of these people in the Middle East. I don't think you said anything about military people visiting your school children in Rhode Island and telling them how wonderful it is to serve in the armed forces, when in fact it's a very dangerous thing for them to do because they might get their arms and legs shot off and they might die there. And in any case, they'll be exposed to depleted uranium in the weaponry that they'll be using. And so many of them will probably die of leukemia. And you allow them to be recruited into this deadly, deadly business. But you don't think that anyone should advertise for people who spew vitriol, which I suppose you're speaking about Miss Palin here. I really don't like Miss Palin. I hope she loses wherever she runs because I think she's a little twit. But she has a right to write a book. She has a right to sell it. And you need to keep your mouth shut. Chaffee made his comments in response to reporters' questions after a meeting on health care. Always comes back to health care, doesn't it? What do these Democrats want with health care? Why are they so big on this? I don't understand it. Is it because they have stock in these insurance companies? Or they know that if they can get this thing to start, they'll get more money from the insurance companies than the Republicans, and they'll be able to keep their sorry rear ends in Congress longer? Oh, couldn't be that now, could it? Mr. Chaffee noted that he had been a target of violence-tinged criticism himself. In 2006, conservative commentator Ann Coulter wrote a column, "They shot the wrong Lincoln," and calling then-Senator Chaffee a half-wit. Well, let's see. That was in 2006, and today it's 2011. That's 5 years. Listen, Mr. Lincoln Chaffee. She wrote this thing called "They Shot the Wrong Lincoln." Have you been shot yet? I don't think so. Chaffee made national news earlier this week when he announced that he would not go on talk radio and would ban state employees from doing so. What a jerk. Where did they find these jerks to run for governor in Rhode Island? What a complete jerk. The ban came because talk radio is essentially, quote, ratings-driven for-profit programming, unquote, that was not appropriate for use of state employees' time, Chaffee said. His spokesman said it had been in the works long before the shooting in Arizona. Well, Mr. Chaffee, seemed to me that you advertised maybe not on talk radio, but on talk television, which is, you know, like NBC News, ABC News. This is like talk radio, except it also has pictures. And I'm sure that when you were running that your ads ran on these TV stations that had these news studios that are ratings-driven and represent for-profit programming, and that for most stations, what they get from these newscasts is a large portion of their percentage take in terms of income. Yet, you don't think that your state employees should go on talk radio that's ratings-driven, and yet you have your ads placed on the very TV stations that have the highest ratings because you know you're going to get more people watching your ads there. Don't you find that a little hypocritical, sir? Or did you just think that no one would even read this on a newscast like I'm doing and then really just kind of pick it apart to see what it really means and how hypocritical it might be? I guess maybe that was it. I don't know. And I don't really care. Because I don't like you very much anymore, sir, because I think there's something about you that needs to be told to people that you haven't told. I need some money to keep the program going, and I'm going to ask my listeners to take out their checkbook and mail a check to me for $5, $10, $15, whatever you can afford. Make it out to Frank Weltner, W-E-L-T-N-E-R, at 6937 Bruno Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63139. Frank Weltner, W-E-L-T-N-E-R, 6937 Bruno Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63139. And I do need your donation, so please send what you can. In addition, I give you permission to take my copyrighted stories and send them to anyone that you wish to send them to. You may record them and give the recordings away. You may record them and post the MP3s by download and then upload to any place on the internet where you think people might want to listen to them. I count on you to spread the news about my radio work and also to spread my websites, www.americanussr.com, by linking to blogs, and also www.jewwatch.com, which gives a lot of information about the Soviet Union that was run by the Jewish people and about the banks that were responsible for funding it, and how you were never told in newspapers that are owned by the same group of people who are a national threat to your very security. Thank you very much, and have a very nice day.